Time for us to be joined by, once again, our good friends at the BerkshireEdge.com, Marcy and David, as they joined us on a weekly basis. And we pick out a few of the many, many stories that you'll find 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at the BerkshireEdge.com. Let's say good morning to both David and Marcy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I was a nice drink of water here. And the reason I'm drinking this water is because we'll obviously discuss it sometime during the show this morning. But
what are you drinking it out of?
I have what do they call it? A plastic container that's non-PO or whatever it is. It's meant to be a safe container. So that's what
it doesn't contaminate the water you're drinking.
It doesn't contaminate the water, and hopefully it doesn't contaminate me. But, but then again, with what I've ingested in my life, that's the least of my worries. But anyway, let us go to some of the stories that we're following with you this morning. Number one, a brainstorming session is set for a public discussion about what to do with the, and I always loved this word, derelict Housatonic Elementary School building.
Derelict.
The minute you hear that word, you know that this building's in pretty bad shape. So let's talk about that meeting that's coming up.
Well, this is Great Barrington has this little village within it named Housatonic. And years ago, each of the town had these little neighborhood elementary schools. And one of them is the Housatonic Elementary School, which sits on a hill right in the center of this little village of Housatonic.
It's a wonderful location because there's lawn all around it and a playground and a...
It sits on a hill, so it overlooks the village. And when Great Barrington consolidated its school system and built a regional kind of a town-wide elementary school, so there weren't these little neighborhood elementary schools. The question came: what to do with these little neighborhood buildings, and especially the one in Housatonic, which has been it's so central to the village, and they just haven't been able to figure out what to do with it.
And it's also deteriorating.
Yes,
there have been several people who've come up with ideas, but they haven't been able to pull together the funding. I mean, there's
right.
Various mixed use.
This has been 10 years
of
trying to decide what to do with this. So now they have a Housatonic Improvement Committee, they're going to have a big meeting
a brainstorming
session to decide what they can come up with for the... Once again, this has been a decade, at least a decade-long process, and they've had various kinds of concepts that just haven't flown. So
I don't know how they're going to find. It's a question of money. There have been people who have come up with ideas, but they just haven't been able to finance it.
Right.
So, and also, as the building deteriorates further, there are problems with the roof. There are problems with the windows. So as it deteriorates further, it's going to be even more expensive. I mean, in 2013, the Community Development Corporation proposed a mixed-use development that was 11 units of affordable housing, commercial space, including space for nonprofits, and even a satellite office for the police.
Right.
But for some reason, that didn't fly, and that would be that would certainly be a perfect solution. And the former head of the Community Development Corporation continues to insist that would have worked, but somehow somebody put the kibosh on it. And anyway, we'll see. I mean, I'm wondering whether the select board is really going to be able to find a viable solution when
Well, one of the problems is that it has renovation of the building would have to include a mediation because it was built in an era when they used asbestos, and that has to be removed.
That's estimated
alone to cost $6 million.
Well, just imagine, you can't even, when a building like that has asbestos in it, you can't even just basically tear it down without having to deal with the asbestos first.
That's right. You have to sequester that, and you can't have asbestos dust lying around either.
Actually, the $6 million is not just for the asbestos remediation, but the full renovation of the building, including asbestos.
For a building that size, it's got to be expensive just to remove the asbestos, and then once you remove it, move on with the plans. It's a quandary that a lot of communities face. It's interesting because there's a lot of elementary schools that have been shut down, and those rooms, most of the, you know, let's say they were grades K through eight, okay? Those rooms, all those teachers' rooms included bathrooms, and there's some communities that converted those into like studio apartments. And at a reasonable cost. Now, I'm not saying that it's possible everywhere, but that has been done in various locations across the United States. And also, because there were schools, they have recreation centers for the people. It's an interesting idea, but right now, everything is so expensive to do.
yes. I mean, construction is so expensive.
It's just crazy.
Pandemic, right.
Well, I want to go on to the next story because I did steal this from you and gave you credit earlier in the week when I put it on our newscast. In Great Barrington, the town has been reimbursed by an insurance company $167,000, which was stolen by the former assistant treasurer, Deborah Ball. And I found this story interesting because if you look at the story and you look at the picture of Deborah Ball, you'd never think about this woman stealing $167,000.
I know. Yeah.
Really?
This was a shock to the town.
That's right.
When it happened, I mean, it was really a shock that that this woman who looks like,
she looks like the Andy Griffith's aunt on the Andy Griffith show.
Exactly.
Really?
She's worked there for years and years and years.
Right.
You know?
Now, does this let her off the hook, or does she still have to come up with some money? And is she going to serve jail time, or?
Well, we don't know yet.
Well, has she been tried?
I don't think so. I think she's just been indicted so far.
No. Yeah. She's been indicted. She pleaded not guilty.
Right.
A couple of years ago, to charges of larceny and embezzlement.
Right.
But nevertheless, they're trying to recover the money.
Yeah.
And the legal fees as well. So, in any case, this story is still percolating.
Okay.
Right.
And it was just a terrible shock that a woman who had just had this ordinary, was just a longtime employee of the town hall, had embezzled all this money.
And her husband had also worked as the head custodian of the town for more than 30 years.
Right.
So we got $200,000 back, which included legal fees and apparently more theft than originally thought.
All right.
Originally, it was about $100,000. It turned out to be about $167,000. But, you know, who knows who else is doing this?
Yeah, it's all you can do is.
It was a fraudulent Ponzi scheme committed in the tax collector's office.
It's amazing. I guess once you're so deep in it, you just keep doing it, and hopefully that. You hold on.
Had about Madoff, you know. I mean, how did he, when he kept doing this, did he think that this was not going to be found out?
Yeah.
You know, now hers is a much much more modest effort.
It's still the same thing. You're taking money from.
Thing. I mean, she took apparently. She took real estate and excise taxes that residents and business owners paid in cash.
Right.
And she tried to cover up the losses by applying portions of the check payments made by other taxpayers. So she was, it was kind of Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
She was taking some people's money and applying it to other people.
Well, let's go on.
Well, no, what is the town manager, Mark Bruhensky, announced is that through our town insurer, the town had recouped approximately $167,000 of the funds that she had allegedly stolen.
The
insurance company paid. She pleaded not guilty.
So sooner or later there'll be a trial. There will be. Yeah.
Well,
I want to move on to another horror story, and that is your stories.
Another horror story.
Yes.
Not another.
Yes. Your stories about Halloween in Great Barrington. The traditional Halloween sidewalk and store display window decoration, and then the story about the trustees of the reservation.
Oh yeah.
Their holiday light display.
This is a traditional. This is a traditional event in which students from the local high school and elementary school come downtown and they do these Halloween decorations and illustrations, and they put them up on the windows of all the downtown stores.
Yeah.
And it's a great sight to see all these students.
Students are down there painting away. They paint on paper, and then they get. Do they actually paint right on the windows?
And they put up their illustrations all over town, all over downtown.
And it's great.
It's yes.
So I mean, the kids love it. I mean, the town loves it, it's a contest. I mean, the kids submit their designs, and then they get chosen by a committee. It's a lot of fun. I mean, this is the wonderful thing about living in a small town. And of course, you look down the list of the kids who've won, and. You know their parents.
Well, this has been going on, by the way, for 70 years.
Yeah.
Well, the other story about the lighting is it's great to see that NUMKEG, their holiday light display, is coming back this year. Because people don't realize how spectacular that is.
It is spectacular.
Oh, it is.
And actually, our, the next issue of our Brookshire Calendar magazine is coming out at the beginning of November, and our cover is a picture of an article about all the places where you can see light shows. This is the season of light, and all religions have light shows. The cover is NUMKEG. They have this winter lights festival, but they have been very imaginative at NUMKEG because in the last 5 years or so, they have special displays for every season. They have a wonderful daffodil festival in the spring where there are thousands and thousands of daffodils all over the NUMKEG campus. And then they had this fall festival, this pumpkin festival, which was also magical.
It's a magical place any time of the year, really, basically.
Well, that's true.
The gardens in the summer, this was kind of one of the Brookshire cottages. It was kind of dark, and they had the trustees of reservation took it over, and they have really made it into an enchanted place. There's also, and we don't have it in this article, but the Mount is doing, for the second year in a row, is doing a festival of light. I forget, it's called wood lights or something like that, where they're illuminating the woods around the mountain. It's also
Edith Wharton's estate in Lenox
cottage,
so-called cottage.
Right.
Don't you love? I love that word, your word cottage, which means a huge estate. If that's a cottage, what is the main house?
The word cottage really is explained to by one's social status in life.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
Right.
I mean,
speaking of cottages.
Yeah. Yes.
We also have a story about breaking ground. The Community Development Corporation, that same group that tried to do something with the elementary school in Housatonic, is now breaking ground on a new affordable housing project on Main Street in Great Barrington.
Right.
So it's breaking ground next week. And how many units will it have? 44 affordable units and 4 workforce apartments. So this will be for families with incomes of up to approximately $53,000 per year. So it's not, you know, it's not welfare housing. It's for working people, and they are. It's called Windrush Commons, and it looks like it's really going to be charming.
And
CDC is the same group that has also done the housing on Bridge Street, you know, next door to the co-op, and across the street from another derelict school building, which is now privately owned, that's supposed to be turned into a hotel in downtown Great Barrington.
The CDC is the Community Development Corporation.
Yeah. It's a non-profit organization.
Right.
Well, it's interesting. Great Barrington seems to have success in putting in housing where other towns in this region are just always something happens where the housing is either delayed by lawsuits or not put up at all.
Right. By the way, again, in the magazine, which will come out at the beginning of November, we have a list of all of the new stores in Great Barrington, and there are at least 10 new businesses, 10 new retail businesses that have started up in the last year in downtown Great Barrington. There's a brand new boulangerie that opened this week. There are, there's a wonderful store called Fluff Alpaca, which is selling the products of a family alpaca farm, and they are gorgeous, gorgeous. Sweaters and woolen products and yarn. So it's Great Barrington. I mean, despite the pandemic, it seems to it's jumping.
Well, that's interesting because in Armenia, New York, over the past 8 months, I think it is 7 or 8 new businesses have opened up in Armenia. Now, obviously, that was helped.
Armenia is so small.
Yeah, but I think it's obviously been helped by the Silo Ridge community being built there. And, and also, believe it or not, by the Four Brothers, their outdoor drive-in movie theater has become a destination for people outside of Armenia.
Right?
Yeah,
interesting.
And I think all that came together. Along with Silo Ridge, and more people now visit, and also they're right there with the train station just south of Armenia.
Right.
So
that's right.
You know, there's certain towns that have certain advantages to attracting new businesses, and especially coming off the pandemic. So that's all positive news, and it all looks.
It is, and I'm wondering whether this pandemic won't kind of renew a kind of interest and in smaller communities, you know, which are sort of like retreats from this pandemic. And people will not view them merely as, vacation retreats, but, livable communities year-round.
All right, we have about 5 minutes left. I want to get on to your next story, and that is your Business Monday feature, a farm that was started by two women.
Yes. Oh, this is really, we have been putting up our business stores on Monday and trying to create a section called Business Monday. And so every week we try to have a profile of a new business and with some sort of sense of how it started and what the struggles are to keep it going. And this is a great story about two local women. I mean, one of them, the land was in the family of another one, of one of them. And she invited her friend to join her in doing the farming. And they've been running this for several, I think for about 3 years now. It's called Full Well Farm. And this is a really interesting story about how you start a farm. I mean, where the financing comes from, how you keep it going year round. I mean, how, you know, they've introduced all kinds of innovative ways to, in order, they are now farming for, you know, fully 9 months. They've got these structures, these covered structures where they, you know, tunnels where they're able to continue to grow well into the fall and the beginning of the winter, and then they've also developed, you know, products that they can sell in the dead of winter that, you know, make use of their farm products, like, you know, wreaths and other kinds of, you know, other kinds of products, so that they are making, and also they salute, you know, there are several organizations in the Berkshires that are supporting and helping farmers. There's Agricultural Ventures, which is a kind of a bank, for, you know, it's a lending agency, and there's Berkshire Grown, which is, you know, has winter farmers markets and is promoting the farm to table movement, and then there's also an organization called Carrot, which was also a kind of financing, so that there are, you know, I mean, There's a lot of infrastructure now to help our farmers, but this is a really charming story about these two women,
right?
Who are producing food and flowers, and they are, you know, they are also heavily participating in, you know, projects like the Berkshire Food Project and Multicultural Bridge, which is trying to sell CSAs, you know, these are
community-supported agriculture,
right?
Yeah.
Shares in farms to local people, so that local people are getting good food at very reasonable prices.
Well, one of the women pointed out that she is the sixth-generation farmer.
Yeah.
Because it used to be her grandparents' dairy farm.
And she's taken she's got the land, you know. The land was in her family, although
right.
I think she's paying rent to the family. It's not free, you know, she hasn't gotten it free. I mean, it is, and so this is not a vanity farm, or this is not a, you know, gentlewoman's farm.
It is a working farm, yeah.
Yeah, it's
a working farm. There are these two young women, and, you know, it's exciting to see it happen.
All right. I'm sorry to say we're out of time. We had two more stories that we were going to touch, but we are flat out of time.
Oh, my
gosh. Okay.
But whatever stories we don't have, folks, theberkshireedge.com
yeah,
is
there. Two interesting stories,
yeah.
And one is an opinion piece from our state rep, Smitty Pignatelli, who writes for us regularly now, and a review of Robert Costa and Bob Woodward's book, Peril, which is definitely worth reading the review, the book.
All right. Those stories and more at theberkshireedge.com. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye. Have a good week, Mark.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah. That is theberkshireedge.com. That's where you can find the stories 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can find a copy of this show at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on the Berkshire Edge on air on Robin Hood Radio.